Welcome to Coffeehouse Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Katie Balls. So finally, we have a deal. It has taken much longer than anyone, even Downing Street, who managed to release that there was a deal about 2 weeks ago, thought. But the DUP have finally signed a confidence and supply agreement with the Conservatives. James, can you just take us through what that deal actually entails?
So the big headline is that there's more than £1 billion extra for Northern Ireland. And because of the way that the money is being given to Northern Ireland, that won't result in more money for the rest of the UK. So there won't be more money for Scotland or Wales or the English regions. I think the critics of the deal are going to say, look, the Tories are using taxpayers' money to keep themselves in power. This money is only going to Northern Ireland to get the votes of the DUP's 10 MPs. There's also an attempt by the government to say that this doesn't change anything related to the Good Friday Agreement or the UK government's stance on Northern Ireland or on the resumption of the power-sharing executive there. I think the other thing to watch, though, is it is quite clear that this deal will be reviewed regularly. And I think one of the signs of a health of the government is whether DUP feel able to come back and ask for more money. If the Tories remain as scared of another election as they are at the moment, I think we can see the DUP, who've shown themselves to be the cannier negotiators throughout this process, coming back for more cash. If the Tories are doing a bit better and look more confident, I think the DUP will avoid doing that.
And Katie, over the past few weeks, as this deal has slowly been hammered out, we've had a lot of people in the Conservative Party complaining about working with the DUP and pointing to some of their socially conservative stances. Have those voices faded now, or are people worried anew now that the deal definitely is on?
I think a lot of Conservative MPs were hoping in a way no deal would be made. They thought that they could work as a minority government, doing informal deals on a case-by-case basis with the DUP and the Lib Dems. And that would also stop them from having this association, which in a formal agreement with the DUP, which could be quite toxic. And you can see how it could be weaponized in the next election if you bring up the DUP's stance on things like abortion and homosexuality. I think the good news for the Conservatives is it's clear from the beginning, but the DUP are not trying to change any of the government's stances on social issues, which is one thing. I think Tory MPs will now have to just suck it up and go with this agreement, but I still think there is anger, and that is palpable about the way Theresa May has handled this. And that this
handled the negotiations or just the whole mess?
Best of both. I think handling the negotiations in the sense by suggesting straight away that there would be a deal. And that's meant that if there wasn't going to be a deal, which some people still wanted, they did concede it would look like it was coming from a position of weakness because it wasn't the Conservatives' decision to not have a deal. They also think the DUP wouldn't really vote down the government because then you would get Comrade Corbyn, which the DUP wouldn't want. But I think now it's here, they're just going to have to make the most of it. But I definitely think there's still a lot of anger and concern about this deal.
I think one of the sweetness for Tory MPs is some unpopular policies get junked under the cover of this deal. So the triple lock on pensions remains, the winter fuel allowance remains across the whole of the UK, and very importantly for Tory MPs with rural seats, farm subsidies will be kept at kind of EU levels by the UK government until 2022.
And is that for all farmers across the United Kingdom?
That's UK wide. Not Northern Ireland only. So I think that's the kind of consolation prize for Tory MPs. But I think Katie is definitely right that you can't get away on the fact that Tory MPs are going to face lots of awkward questions at public meetings about, you know, you are in bed with a party that is hostile to gay marriage, hostile to abortion. All of this stuff is going to come up. Now, you can point out, as various Tories have been doing sotto voce, that, you know, nearly all the political parties in Northern Ireland have similar stances on these issues. You know, the SDLP is Labour's sister party and is just as opposed to abortion as the DUP is. But I still think there is a kind of issue of, because Northern Ireland does seem like a different country to lots of people in the UK, especially on social issues, this will be a problem for the Tories.
And let's just talk about why it's taken so long to get this deal, James. That there have been rumblings that you've reported in your column of dissatisfaction with the way the negotiating team have really handled this from the start.
I think it's dissatisfaction with the way Theresa May has handled it. Because by coming out, as Katie said, by coming out and saying there was going to be a deal on the Friday straight after the election, she enabled the DUP to put her over a barrel, which essentially is, you said there's going to be a deal. You said that you told the Queen there's going to be a deal. So here's the price of our support. I mean, there are lots of people who would rather that she basically said that no deal is better than a bad deal, and basically dared the DUP to vote down the government on either Brexit, which the DUP supported, or in a confidence motion. Because, you know, look, as Katie says, the DUP don't want Jeremy Corbyn, one of the men who is, you know, most sympathetic to the Irish Republican cause of anyone in British public life, as Prime Minister. I mean, that would be a complete nightmare for them. And then the other thing that has annoyed members of the cabinet about this negotiation is the DUP got as good an election result in Northern Ireland as they can got. They got 10 MPs. They really cannot hope to get more than that. So they're not going to be any hurry, let alone on the UK-wide picture for another election. But also within Northern Ireland, they're not going to want another election. You know, they did much, much better in this general election than how they did in the Assembly elections would suggest that they do.
Well, and Katie, what does this mean for the prospect of the next election? Some people are joking that we've got one in a few weeks. Most are saying probably 2 years after the Brexit deal. Does this deal change that?
Well, I mean, Jeremy Corbyn apparently said that he would be Prime Minister in 6 months' time when he was at Glastonbury this weekend, the place of political plotting. I think that this deal does bring some stability, not the stability we were initially promised a few months ago by Theresa May, but we do have a slight period of it. And I think that we might now see, you know, people looking ahead to who will be the next leader. I think Theresa May will get to recess and then there'll be more plotting. In terms of an election, you get the impression that this two-year session is going to bring it to a point where they may decide they want to go to the polls. Because also, after this threadbare Queen speech, what are they going to put in the next one?
There might well also be a need for a kind of Brexit. It might well turn into a Brexit ratification election. That there is a possibility that you get a Brexit deal, and then you can't get it through one or other chamber. And the only way to break that deadlock is to go to the country on the basis of the deal. I think the thing I would say is that politics at the moment is, it is just remarkably volatile. You know, if you call a source in the morning, they will tell you something very passionately about the timetable when Theresa May must go. You call them in the afternoon, they'll tell you something completely different with equal conviction. For the Tory party right now, there are no good options. There are only least worst options. And so people are swinging dramatically between varying least worst options.
Yeah, I found that they've changed their mind during phone calls as to whether this is terrible or things are actually starting to stabilise. So people are very volatile at the moment.
Yeah, I was really struck even in the Sunday papers. Each paper seemed to have a different story or a different briefing about who was the bright light of the Conservative Party.
Probably from the same person.
And who all the MPs would love, which just showed you how there is no clear decision because there just aren't enough good options.
I'm sceptical personally of whether there can be a coronation for two reasons. First of all, one cabinet minister who has explored whether you could find someone to coronate says that they found it impossible to find a candidate who was acceptable to both leave and remain. And then the other reason why someone who would have to be involved in kind of clearing the field for a coronation said to me, there are simply too many candidates. You know, if all you had to do was put the four most senior members of a government, you know, so Boris Johnson, David Davis, Philip Hammond and Amber Rudd in a room and say, look, when one of you leaves this room, they're going to be prime minister and all the others will stand aside. That would be very difficult, but it might have some chance of success. It becomes impossible when you have to also invite into the room Sajid Javid, Andrea Leadsom, Priti Patel, and all sorts of other people who you wouldn't naturally think of as candidates, but fancy running. I think there are just too many people to do that. And I'm also, unless Theresa May decides to walk, I think it's very hard to see how the Tories could justify having three prime ministers within one parliament, which is what the Hammond option floated over the weekend would require.
Thank you, Katie. Thank you, James. And you can subscribe to this podcast on the iTunes store. Just search for Coffee House Shots. And a reminder of our special offer for podcast listeners, 12 issues of The Spectator for £12 plus a free Moleskine notebook. Visit spectator.co.uk/pod offer.